So Sarah, you're going to land straight in at a non-towered airport with other people in the pattern. What are you going to say to the person who comes stomping up to your airplane at the end and tells you that that is completely illegal?
I'm going to pull the safety card. I'm going to say that I felt that it was safer to land a straight in, given the conditions and the situation with how many aircraft were in the pattern, that I felt like maneuvering into a pattern would have created a complexity that I just didn't want to deal with. And I'm not sure. Is it really technically illegal?
No.
The FARs say nothing about the straight in.
It's not illegal. It's in the AIM, and it says that straight ins are allowed as long as you don't cut off the other people in the pattern. It's really quite plain. I don't think it's impolite. We have a radio, so we can negotiate these things, and there was once a time when we did that. Now people seem to get torqued out of shape occasionally because of these kinds of things, but it's a decision I would make too. You just make sure that everybody understands what the plan is.
That's right. I'm sure everybody understands what the plan is, and I always like to be courteous. If I'm going to do a straight-in approach, I want to make sure that I don't force somebody to extend downwind, or if there's confusion, I'm going to make a different plan. So if you're going to go straight in, make sure that everybody's on the same page and you're going to be able to work in to the system without creating more confusion or creating an unsafe situation.
As you said, there's nothing wrong with doing a straight in. I would have gone and flown the pattern for two reasons, slightly different reasons. First, it would allow me to look for any non-radio airplane that might also be in the pattern that I haven't seen, I haven't heard, and that I haven't seen yet. But primarily, back to the original quandary about what runway to use, that would give me a conventional downwind, gives me time to find the windsock and get a visual feel for myself of where the winds are for this runway. So I would have maneuvered for the pattern.
I would have done the straight in, and I think that's the reasonable thing to do. I like how it works for traffic spacing, and I also like I agree, Tom, that it would be really nice to be able to get a good look at the windsock. But if you're flying final approach to a runway, you are going to notice any crosswind, and I'd be ready to go around if there happened to be a crosswind that's too strong for my limitations. And you know, it's not also a bad idea, as long as we're talking on the radio, to ask about the wind conditions to the pilots who are in the pattern. How's the wind and the runway alignment? Is it a strong crosswind for 2-6? Does the wind favor landing 2-6? And I think they'd be happy to tell you. The less time you spend flying around the airport traffic pattern, the less potential there is for for a traffic conflict, and I like the idea of going straight in.
To Dave's point about traffic conflicts, there's a real tendency today, all of us have GPS, and we go direct to the airport, and then we try to sort out entering the pattern. Why not, when you're still 10 miles out, some distance, figure out roughly what you think you want to do based on what you know at the time, and then maneuver away from the airport a few miles to plan to enter the pattern, get a better close-up assessment, talk to the other pilots. But there's no need to go right over the top of the airport to sort this out. You can often, by deviating just a few miles, get a better situational awareness.
Well, now, I know 4Flight now has a tool, you know, when you load procedures, you can load instrument procedures, but you can also load various traffic patterns to specific runways. I'm wondering if anyone here has actually used that and how well that's worked for them. I see some nods around the table. Has anyone actually given it a try?
I've used it before, and I think it's a great tool if you're going into an airport that maybe you're unfamiliar with, or maybe it's at night and, you know, you're going to have a hard time maybe picking up the airport. I think it's a great tool to get some situational awareness.
You know, the learning point to me for this exercise was the difference between true and magnetic in the different weather reports. I was frankly unaware of that, and I had originally scratched out a different answer before reading the response, hearing the explanation, and it was only after hearing the explanation for me that the case became persuasive for a straight into 2-6.
What were you doing otherwise? I mean, let's suppose people were landing at a runway that was not favorable to the winds, but that was, you know, what everyone was doing. Or would you have
you
done
know,
it differently?
It would have been to query the pilots in the pattern and then set up for landing, left traffic for 3-2. Because I would have, you know, reading the METAR, I would have thought that was the most favorable. Also, I have no shame in wanting to avoid a crosswind at an unfamiliar airport in a faraway part of the country and just landing into the wind. I've usually fly tailwheel airplanes, and it's like, I'm going to land into the wind. If it's inconvenient to others or I have to orbit for a while before landing, doesn't matter. I'm happy to do it because I want to get that into the wind runway.
I agree with that, and I think the teaching point really is the difference in the wind direction reports. It occurred to me that something that I very frequently do with my students is to intentionally use a runway that has a stronger crosswind for training purposes. There's one airport very near where I live. It's an untowered airport. It has two virtually identical 4,000-foot-long runways that are almost at right angles. And inevitably, you're going to have a little bit of a crosswind on one and a lot of crosswind on the other. So I generally will take a student and we'll do two or three times around the pattern on the one with less of a crosswind. And then it's, okay, now here's the test. Let's go do the crosswind. It may well have been that one of these other airplanes was intentionally using less than an optimal runway for training purposes. So getting on the radio and asking what's going on is a really good idea.
So let's say you don't do the straight in and you're going to enter left traffic for runway 26. Do you guys go over the airport and enter the left downwind, or do you go south of the airport and set up for the left 45?
Well, since I was the one that I was the dissenter and was going to do that, I would have, as Bruce has suggested, would have been steer wide to the airport to come in on a 45. If I were going to go directly over the airport, I'll do it at least 500 feet above the pattern height. But I generally would go around and do go around the long way to get onto a downwind 45.
But you're saying upwind, crosswind, downwind base.
No, I would actually, if the airport was at my 12 o'clock, I might turn to about 10 o'clock and go a couple of miles south of the runway to come in on a 45 for it. I wouldn't do the upwind typically.
Don't you think that adds is a little bit dangerous? You're getting away from the airport kind of in the traffic pattern area versus like flying directly over the airport. Even, and why add the 500 feet? I think Jeff brought up the point that you can actually enter it. It might be safer to enter at traffic pattern. So you can actually see the other aircraft at that altitude and then turn left. I mean, I've heard that over the airport can be safer, but if you maneuver around the airport, you're potentially kind of in the traffic pattern area. Who's to say you're far enough out or that somebody's close enough in?
Well, that's true. Given that so many people fly so incredibly wide on the downwind now, there is that potential. It might be safer to do the upwind at the pattern altitude and do sort of the overhead brake sort of thing, which is another option for getting into a runway like this.
Well, and there is also in this scenario someone coming in from that general direction as well. So now you've got to be watching out for them.
Person was on a 10-mile final, so they're actually behind you.
And FAA recently updated the advisory circular for operations at non-towered airports. And one of the things it specifically mentions is doing that crossover the airport and make a turn to downwind. So that's now a mentioned procedure. I'd also like to mention just one other thing about the straight-in approaches, and that is that often I'm flying with students at non-towered airports and we're doing instrument approaches, practice instrument approaches. Therefore, we're flying along final. We often have to work it out. We're doing an opposite direction approach because we have to do a circle to land for practice or training. So these situations arise, and I'm often trying to point out to other pilots when this discussion arises that we're doing things often in VFR training, like Tom mentioned. You're trying to find crosswinds for practice. You're practicing a simulated engine out. You need a short approach. You need to do a stop and go. So there's plenty of situations where we have to do something out of the ordinary for training, and it's to our benefit for everybody just to relax a little bit and try to make room for these things when the need arises.
I was going to say, I like the probability of flying over the airport, and I do it at pattern altitude because then I'm not likely to descend into someone. But I found that that type of approach gives you a real good view of the runways and the windsock angle to the runway. And so you have a good sense of what the component is likely to be. I'm not a huge fan of wind checks, particularly on final, because I don't know what to do with that information, because now I've lined up on the runway. If he says 15 knots or he says 18 knots, does that make any difference to me? No, because I'm doing the visual calculation now. I got to get the crab set up or the slip or whatever it is I'm going to do, and I'm going to deal with it in the moment without thinking about the actual values. So I would want the wind 10 miles out or 5 miles out or whatever, and then make the decision then. And then that one last point about negotiating on the straight in and opposite directions. All that stuff is fair game in an uncontrolled airport. Just work it out. And if there's someone in the airplane or someone in the pattern without a radio, that could be me, just keep your eyes open. This is not that difficult to do, and it's not a huge risk to do those kinds of operations. You just have to be comfortable with them.
You brought up, Sarah, doing a land and hold short, essentially, landing and stopping short of the other runway. You wouldn't do it just for the potential of the overrun, even though it's 3,000-something feet. Anyone else, if you were uncomfortable with that crosswind and no one else would switch, is that on the table as a reasonable option for anyone, or is that like, no, that actually is off the table at a non-controlled airport?
No, it doesn't sound like a good idea to me, but not so much because I was concerned about blowing through it. I mean, I'm in a 172. I've got a big headwind or a crosswind. I'm fully confident that I can touch down and come to a stop. If I can touch down and come to a stop, the issue is, what if I need to go around, and then there's the potential for a real traffic conflict.
And it's entirely acceptable to get on the radio and tell the others that that you are going to land on 3-2. That's fine. They know what you're going to do. One of the big issues in operating in a non-towered airport is to be predictable, behave in a way that others expect you to, so they know to look for you. David's exactly right. I my concern wouldn't be the inability to stop short. It would be, what if I can't handle that crosswind and I have to go around? Then you have a conflict.
And, you know, to Tom's earlier point about practicing, intentionally landing on the crosswind runway for practice, you know, I've had that happen too. I think we probably all have, where you know, I'm taking a student, we're doing circuits, we're intentionally practicing crosswind landings, and then somebody else comes in the pattern and just follows you. And it's like, gosh, guys, I didn't intend to make everybody practice crosswind landings. I'm only doing that for me or for my student.
Well, do you have an obligation at that point to those people to say, hey, we're over here to make it hard. We'll get out of your way.
But it's like sometimes what I'll do is I'll announce landing crosswind on runway 9er, you know, so just to make it clear that that's why I'm not going into the wind. And, you know, to other people who are practicing patterns, you know, they often feel like they're in the pattern, they own the pattern, and they almost, you know, it's like, anybody else, this is my turf, nobody come in here, and especially don't come in here if you're making a straight in, because, you know, I'm the pattern sheriff and that's not going to happen on my watch. And it's like, look, if you are practicing landings, just be cognizant of the fact that you're the one making extraordinary demands and you should bend over backwards to accommodate arriving traffic. They're only going to make one landing in all probability. You're making lots. So, you know, just be friendly and share it.
I think that goes to Katie's point about, you know, if you're going to land straight in, to be, you know, accommodating about it. I know, like, one of my own things is whenever I'm doing a long straight in, it's always straight in runway 26 traffic permitting. I just kind of toss that in there, and as a way of saying, like, I understand if there's other people in the pattern, like, I will defer to someone who turned base in front of me, even if I kind of had right away, just because that's the sort of standard way. I'm just going to concede the point right now. Little techniques like that could be helpful.
Well, this all goes to a point I make with folks a lot, that a non-towered airport is kind of like the aeronautical equivalent of a roundabout or a four-way stop sign. Everybody knows what you're supposed to do, but keep your eyes open.
I want to get to the point a little bit about the use of data link weather, because it's, you know, just a sea change in how we deal with weather as aviators. And I've certainly seen people who I've flown with as students who they look at their tablet or what's on the MFD, and they never dial up the ASOS or AWOS. And if you're flying in the middle of the country where there's not a big difference between, you know, magnetic and true, you're never going to come up with that. But even, as could be pointed out, you know, the reports that could have come from very similar times, but that AWOS or ASOS is only updated, you know, once an hour, and it could be, you know, 15, 20 minutes is a long time. Are other people seeing that as an issue where people, you know, don't check anymore? It's a pain to sort of listen in.
I know I'm tempted not to listen sometimes because, you know, you're on approach, maybe things are happening fast, and it's like, look, I just saw the data link weather. How much different could the actual weather be? You know, do you have information, Juliet? It's like, well, sure I do. It's next best thing.
I'm guilty of exactly the same thing. I'm getting really busy, and I haven't been able to pick up the ATIS, and maybe I get handed off to approach a little earlier than I thought, and I've said, I have the weather. Well, no, I don't really have the weather. I'm guilty of possibly falling into that trap a little myself sometimes.
When you run into the issue with the ATIS there, that it's not just the weather. There may be some last-minute notam that was tossed on there as well.
But even when I'm flying into an airport with AWOS or ASOS, looking at the – I am guilty of at least being sorely tempted to just go with what's on the screen instead of tuning it in.
I think a good practice is also even if you're quite a ways out, tune up the CTAF and start listening and get a visual picture of what's happening in the pattern, how many airplanes there are, what kind of airplanes they are, and you might even get some clues as to why pilots are using a certain runway and what's going on in the area. So tune up CTAF and listen.
Yeah, and that's going to give you your ability to actually plan your negotiation in advance, that if there's something that you're not happy about that you're going to want or you're going to have to work out, you'll hear that. You may even hear people arguing already. So, you know, you can kind of...
I'd also argue for painting with kind of a broad brush, you're kind of marking with a crayon and cutting with an axe and not getting too obsessive about the actual numbers and values. Because whatever it is, you're going to have to deal with it when you roll out into the groove on final. And you're going to feel you can do it or you can't. And it's good to know if it's way out of limits, but it's probably counterproductive to worry too much about the specific angles and the velocity.
And as a new pilot in this situation, it's like, I'm going to take comfort in the fact that there's other airplanes out doing touch and goes on this runway. You know, how awful could it be if they're making repeated takeoffs and landings at this runway I'm going to land on?
Well, of course, that other pilot could be you in the pattern practicing with your student, making it as difficult as possible on a crazy crosswind. But nonetheless, you do have a point. At least it is doable by somebody.
And you have no moral obligation to inform him what you're doing. If he follows you, that's his business. He's the pilot in command.
So really the takeaway from that is that, you know, it's up to you to maintain that kind of situational awareness coming into the airport and not rely too heavily on any source of information, because they're all going to have their fallibilities and their little vulnerabilities to error. And I like what you said, Paul, about, you know, eventually it's going to come down to what happens when you line up on final and you're tracking down towards a runway, because anything could happen. Anything could change in those last couple moments.
And keep it classy. Don't respond to a nasty comment with another nasty comment. Silence is much more effective.